Paul Goody.
Hey, Ben Lawrence, how's it going?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
All right. It's 5 o'clock on a Saturday for me.
Yeah, 3 p.m. on Saturday
And
for me.
I haven't left my house, and I don't know if I'm going to today or not.
Those are the best days.
I really think so. Not to get too much into the concepts of prehistory and all that, but from what I understand, my ancestors lived in caves, so I
Well,
think that's why I like to stay inside.
when you think about it, didn't everybody's?
Apparently not. Apparently not everybody. Depends on who you ask, though. That's the
Oh,
other
there
thing.
weren't ancestors who lived in caves. There were ancestors who lived on grasslands.
I saw a report today that is kind of crazy, and you can look it up if you want to. The concept is that cephalopods came to Earth on like meteors or something, and that they aren't actually native to this planet.
I've heard a theory where not just cephalopods, but life as we know it was seeded on the Earth by incoming asteroids.
Apparently, the reason for the cephalopod idea, and the reason why they separate it from the other ones, is that, like, when they showed up, there was this what they called a boom of new life form stuff. But then the rest of it
It's
started to
just
sound a little hokey.
All those single-celled organisms getting down.
Exactly, but well, getting down like from
From
space
space. Hey,
and the.
so we're recording on Saturday. This is actually the second Saturday in a row, or actually the second weekend in a row. Last week we recorded on Sunday. I have to explain why. And
Yes.
that's because, as you know, I don't have a regular job. I freelance, which means
Yes.
I take jobs as they come to me, and I'm not really the best at going out and looking for work. I'm not really built for the hustle. I have, a few like regular gigs that kind of float me by, and when something else comes along, I if I can take it, I probably should. And a week ago,
Yes.
a little over a week ago, I was contacted by another video editor friend of mine who works actually at a large corporation doing video editing. And he's like, "Hey, we need help this week. Can you come in and help us?" And I'm like, "Sure, I can do that. I can, I can sacrifice the regular weekly things that I normally do for a healthy paycheck and time in an office."
Yes.
And so that was not just this past week, but 2 weeks ago. And then during that week, they were like, "All right, well, we have all this other work that we need done, and you're here, so do you want to do it?" So I, of
Yeah.
course, said yes. So I now find myself with, and this all happened basically, not overnight, but like I was contacted Friday afternoon, like 3 p.m. Friday afternoon. I was contacted, and they're like, "Can you come in on Monday?" And I wrote
Yeah.
back at 4 p.m. Friday. I'm like, "Yes, I can." So, in the course of, a weekend, I'm now going to be working full time in this office until the end of June. So,
Wow,
you and
that's
I,
crazy.
this affects you and I because I can no longer record our show at our normal time because it happens during business hours here. So, I'll
So
apologize,
I
but for the
guess.
next few weeks, we're going to have to find time either late at night for you or on the weekends.
Now, I don't want to get too much into it. Of course, we try to keep our working lives out of this as much as possible, but
Indeed.
do I know this friend
Yeah, you do know this friend.
of yours? Is it perhaps, now again, is it perhaps a job that I might have tried to get at one point in time?
No, it's video editing.
Right. Not so much the actual job, but the company that I'm thinking of.
I don't know. I don't know who all you applied for. I can tell you it's not Amazon or Microsoft.
Okay, so it's
I
I
can
the,
tell you
here
that.
I'll tell you what I was thinking of. I was thinking that maybe it was Woot.
Oh, Woot. You know what? I think yeah. Woot closed.
Oh, if, that's too bad.
If they didn't close, they I do know that they laid off our friend who did work there.
That is what I was wondering. Well, once again, you know, I'm glad that I made the choice that I did then, because I'm still employed.
Yeah. So
here,
so this also, granted, but it's a bit like when you are freelancing, it is very much feast or famine, right? You either have a
yes.
lot, you know, what feast and famine is. I don't need to explain it, but
yeah,
that's
yeah,
kind
of course,
of what,
of course,
that's kind of what my life has been like for the last 10 years or so. And
yeah.
it really has, it displayed itself like from like last October, November, even December, I had nothing. I basically just didn't have any work at all. And then like this year, it's right now is very much a feast, period, because I've got like three different freelance things that I'm doing. And then I have, right now I have this full-time thing, and we are mm-hmm. going to be shooting the next episode of The Panel Jumper next week, which I have to
wow.
find time to make sure I get an edit by the time the live show comes around on June 22nd. So
that's crazy.
My next month and a half, or I guess it's just about a month, and my next month is going to be me going to work from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. downtown, taking the light rail to Annex, working on either other freelance stuff or Panel Jumper stuff until probably 10, 11 o'clock at night, maybe even later if I need to, and then going home, getting a few hours of sleep, and getting up and doing it all over again.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so say goodbye to me.
So wait, how does that... So the show, the recording that we do...
Yeah.
Are we gonna want to take... time off to give you more
no
space?
We can, as long as we're okay. as long as we're doing this you know, like after 8 p.m. your time or any, you know, random times on the weekends, like right now it's 3
yeah,
o'clock
yeah.
on a Saturday. That's a lovely
yeah,
day
exactly.
here in Seattle.
So, yeah, it works for me. The only thing is I just need to make sure that I set an alarm so that because you know me, I'm a creature of habit. So if
yeah.
I always know that Tuesday, in fact, I got to say or sorry, not Tuesday, Thursday.
Yeah.
Right? Is
you
it
already
Thursday?
Get it. He already gets it wrong. It's Thursday.
Or is
yeah.
it Tuesday?
Thursday.
Yeah, okay. Thursday. Yeah, well, the like this Thursday, I panicked because I was like, oh no, I forgot to call Dan again. And then I was like, oh wait, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, getting back to the freelance thing and all that, I mean, when I was working in Seattle, I was kind of that way for a while too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what the song March is all about. The concept
oh,
of
yeah.
both a forced march because you're just trying to move forward, but also the month of March, for whatever reason, for me, was always like the hardest time. Like
really,
like no jobs whatsoever.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, all sorts of, you know, bills coming due and all that.
Yeah.
So I definitely, it is really nice having a regular gig.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine about this just yesterday, where I do have the mentality that the grass is always greener on the other side, and
mm-hmm.
I have to remind myself that the grass may be greener on the other side, but I really like the color green on my side sometimes. You know, like
yeah.
I sometimes take the freelancing lifestyle for granted when I suddenly have to get up and go somewhere every morning in the morning and do what they tell me.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I get used to it pretty easily, but it's crazy. Sometimes I've been at jobs, and this is, you know, after I've been unemployed for a while, I've been at jobs where people are like, man, I can't stand this. This is, I'm out of here. You know, all that.
Right,
and I'm
right.
like, you can do that? and for me, you know, it's always been like, yay, I'm working.
Right.
It doesn't matter, you know, and the idea that, oh, I'm not happy at work is weird to me. It's like, work is never happy for me. There's always stuff that I would rather be doing.
Right.
So I just want my work to be interesting so that the time doesn't drag on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not... And this is something that, of course, my family does not agree with me on. But the thing where I look at the clock and I don't have enough time feels better than having time drag out. You know, because then all of a sudden, you know, I'm already... And it's yeah. It's better... It's so hard to describe, but it's better when it's someone else's problem that I'm helping with.
Yeah.
And I'm not doing anything wrong, and everybody's happy that I've...
That you're there.
...helped them. Yeah, exactly. That it's a very specific, narrow window, but when it fits, it really helps.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was funny because I was about to tell you, the only thing I've got going on is Memorial Day weekend. Some people, Jennifer's friends and family are coming into town. And so we have to be careful. And then this is what I was going to tell you. Like in September, some friends of mine are coming into town. And I realized that you were the one who was coming into town.
Yeah.
So I was about to inform you that that was happening. But no, Jennifer's going to visit her family in July.
Oh, yeah?
And this is one of those cases of I got to go with them, Jennifer and Betty, last time, but I'm going to be working this time. My boss is going on vacation, and I'm covering.
And when you say Jennifer is going to visit her family, you mean Jennifer and Betty are going to visit family?
Yeah, Jennifer and Betty going to visit her mom in July. So that's one of those things of, I think I've told you about this before, the cat really helps, but whenever I'm by myself in my house, I always get scared.
Scared? I don't like being...
Yeah, it's weird. Like
Is this like an like existential threat, or do you feel like physically physically scared?
Oh, like it's like a supernatural kind of thing. Like okay. Every noise that I hear is probably a ghost. That kind of thing. So I end up not sleeping a lot because I stay up until I get really, really tired and then I go to sleep. It's weird. But it's constant. At least I know that it's happening.
Yeah, you can depend on it.
But having the cat is great because then any noise that I hear isn't a ghost. It's probably the cat. And I don't get scared until I realize the cat isn't in the house.
Yeah,
and
then, well, you also can't depend on cats to be a good barometer of what noises to be afraid of and what noises are okay. Because cats will just freak out at anything.
We keep thinking about maybe getting a dog.
Dogs are great.
I really feel like I think I told you about it, the stray dog that wasn't a stray, you know, but like had run away from its owners that we were taking care of for just a little bit, really kind of got me thinking what it would be like. Because it's like I was lying down and the dog just ran up and put his head on me.
Yeah.
And fell asleep. I was like, oh,
although,
geez.
Dogs take work. I mean, you have to commit to owning a dog. Like cats, you can basically just make sure they have food and water and empty their litter box or like let them outside. And that they're pretty chill. Dogs take a lot more work.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I told you my whole deal about growing up where dogs aren't mistreated by everybody around here, but they you know are treated in a way that
they're
most folks in Seattle probably wouldn't like. Well, like chained to a stake in the yard forever.
I'm guessing that you're that and I'm making a grand generalization here, but people in the Midwest treat their pets like animals, whereas people in the Northwest treat their pets like family.
I like to think that's probably true. Yeah. Like for example, now this isn't everyone, especially like friends of mine, dogs are inside and everything like that, but in a lot of the rural areas you the idea of your dog coming inside,
right,
there's either got to be a tornado happening,
yeah,
you know, or something else, because the animal does not go inside the house.
And I mean, I'm wondering if that stems from like a farming mentality where
I believe dogs, it does. Yeah, I mean, because
dogs are considered part of the farm.
Yeah, because I was actually... Cats, too, in fact.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah, to a point, I
and
guess.
And you're outside most of the time, too. So the idea of letting the animals inside has got to be kind of weird, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, you don't let the goat inside, why let the dog inside, or whatever. But, yeah, for me... Oh, that's kind of interesting. So I've been thinking about computers a lot, the way that programming languages work.
Okay.
And the way that they're a system. A farm is kind of a system also. You got the cow thing, and then you've got the dog thing, and you've got the cat thing, and they all have different jobs that they do, and roles and things like that. I was thinking about traffic. You know, the car goes to the stop sign, it stops, and then it keeps going. That's very much a program thing, a programming thing. Like, we have actually, we're programming drivers. Now, what's the difference between a driver and many computer programs, though? The
autonomy?
Drivers can, yes, the drivers can ignore commands.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't always. They usually do it, but they do ignore commands sometimes.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about, at some point in time, people might put that into programming a little bit. Where, because right now, if something goes wrong with a computer program, it's mostly because you didn't tell it to do the right thing. But we've got some things like Clippy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, it seems like you wanted to... you know, write a letter. Can I help you with that? That sort of thing.
Well, I will say that like a city grid is like a program where you have the bits of data that are traveling along a path and
yeah.
like, and I'm like pedestrians on a sidewalk. And like, if these bits of data travel along the wrong path or travel or, you know, for whatever reason, ignore the command they're given, the program breaks down. Whereas when you have pedestrians who cross against traffic or drivers who blow stop signs, it's the breakdown of the social order. It's the programming of the city or of the you know, suburban areas is breaking down because people, the data, aren't following what they're being told.
I was actually thinking about this a little bit. You know, the whole breakdown of society thing, right?
Yeah.
Concept of people like rioting in the streets and all that kind of stuff. If ever it happens like on a larger scale, I honestly think that it may be it may happen through traffic more than people punching each other. Like, everybody gets in their cars and just drives and hits each other and all that kind of stuff, because it's the closest thing we have to armor and things like that.
And that's
a car is a very dangerous thing.
That's what's going to worry me about whenever either the social order breaks down in Seattle, which, you know, I don't think we're on the verge of anytime soon. But if there's a large-scale natural disaster, be it an earthquake or a volcano, right? What's going to be the impulse of a lot of people? Get in your car and go. And like get out of the city. But you can't do that on a good day, you know?
Yeah,
you are not going to be able, you are not going anywhere in your car, which is why I've been like, I'm wondering, like, how long will it take me to walk to like my sister's house, who lives in Mill Creek. So that's about on like a 35-40 mile distance. You know, it's just one of those things where if something happens around here and I need to get out of the city for whatever reason, my car is not how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
I wouldn't even count on the train.
Oh, definitely not. No. Especially, I mean, if the trains still run like they're supposed to, that's one thing. But
right.
Who knows about, there's got to be emergency procedures. It may be like the elevators where the trains, you know, are used for official things only, and if you're not on it, you don't get to be on it.
Well, through downtown and to the university district, the train is completely underground, so it won't be affected by city streets. But again, there's got to be, like, they have to have some sort of procedure in store for, you know, what to do in that case.
I do think that is a good point, though, is that a lot of people would flee the city if there's an issue.
Yeah.
Now, there are some people, of course, who maybe don't have family nearby. The city is the only thing. I'm thinking about, like, in... when the WTO thing happened, right?
Yeah.
I lived downtown, and I didn't really have any relatives or anything like that. There was... And I didn't really know anybody, even up in Capitol Hill, who I would, like, go and... So I had... to stay where the stuff was happening.
Yeah, and your apartment was right there, right? Where, you know, you could probably see the smoke bombs and flashbangs being thrown past your front window.
Exactly. And so, you know, you'll have those folks. But yeah, anybody who knows anybody outside of the city, they'd probably take off.
Yeah.
I keep on thinking about the one thing about living in the Midwest... There is a fault line around here, so we could have an earthquake happen at some point in time.
Oh, really?
But, like, yeah, it's true. When I was in high school, actually, there was a minor earthquake. Very minor.
Yeah.
But it was enough to where, I remember it because I was in a theater class. We were all lying down on the ground doing a thought exercise, basically.
Yeah.
And it felt like somebody was walking around behind us, because the stage was shaking. And it was later on where we found out, we were actually pretty safe when that happened.
Yeah, you don't think of the Midwest as earthquake country, but my grandmother lives in Oklahoma, and Oklahoma has had a rash of earthquakes lately, and they're saying that it's because of fracking.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And so
I can see that.
It's, you know, like Oklahoma, that's tornado country. So I can only imagine if an earthquake and a tornado hit the same area at the same time.
Oh, wow, that would be crazy. Yeah. Because your procedures are a little bit different for...
Yeah, tornado, run and hide inside of a building.
Could happen. So, let's see, so... The idea, the concept of getting out of someplace fast. I was also thinking, you know, even with people, it's a little bit weird. Because do you remember when I was working right across from the stadium?
Yeah.
Was I working? If you think about it, okay, this is near where you were working too, when we were working both in the same office park.
Our buildings were right next to each other, yeah.
What did we look out to? Did we look out to Safeco Field or did we look out to the stadium?
You would have looked out to Seahawks Stadium. Safeco Field was a bit further south. My building looked out over the north parking area just north of the stadium. But at one point, I had a corner seat. Not office, it was a desk, but I had the corner. Yeah. So I looked out at the stadiums.
Yeah, and I was actually looking out at the stadium. I could see it from the window where I was at. And I would see people just streaming in and streaming out whenever there was a big thing.
Right.
Like they were, you know, people say like ants, but really like ants going into an anthole, coming out of an anthole.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it. If there was ever a panic, people would get trampled for sure. There's no way around it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're packed in like that.
I think about that a lot whenever I go to a place like a Mariners game at Safeco Field, or even when I go to this office that I've been working at. I'm in the 30s floor-wise. And so if an earthquake hits and the building doesn't, you know, fall down, then I got to walk down 30-some floors. And everybody's going to be like, some people might be running out. Some people might be just walking. You got people who have mobility issues. It's going to be a mess.
I remember I was in in the auditorium of the building where my daughter now goes to middle school, but it was high school for me.
Okay.
And they were showing a movie or a film. They were getting ready to. And they put it on, but the volume was way too high. And all that I can remember is that it started playing, And all of a sudden, I was in the hallway, like, not of the next floor, but by the stairwell for the next floor. Like, I was, my mind just went completely blank, and I just ran out. That's how loud it was. It was crazy. And the only other time I felt like that, I was in some sort of venue. I forget what it was for, but the doors open. It was general seating. The doors open, and everybody just started rushing in. And I lost the people that I was with, and somebody stepped on my hand.
On your hand? Did you fall down?
I guess I fell. And that's the thing is, I had to have, right? But it was just this blur kind of.
Yeah.
And both those times, it was, you know, sort of an animal instinct part of me taking over.
Yeah.
It was really kind of crazy.
I've never been in a public public, you know, when everybody's kind of freaking out, trying to get out.
Yeah.
Public panic, thank you. When I was in college, I went to a couple concerts with some friends of mine that had mosh pits. And basically, yeah. In the mosh pits, it wasn't a pit. It was just like the first, like, you know, just the first few feet next to the stage where people let themselves free to be as violent as they wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I generally stayed out of the way, but I think I was like a freshman in college, and the concert, I think, was Danzig or something. And I didn't really want to go, but my friends had a spare ticket. So, yeah, whatever. I'll go see Glenn Danzig. And I made my way up as close as I could to be part of the mosh pit. And it was still like I got enveloped by just this crowd of people. And I don't know if you've ever been in a mosh pit before, but generally what happens is instead of just like this mass of people just like jumping up and down and dancing, it kind of splits into an open circle. I don't know, but there's an area in the middle of Florier, and people run through, and other people like punch other people or elbow. I got elbowed in the chest at one point, and I'm like, okay, that's enough. I'm out of here, and I had to make my way out. But there was that moment of, like, I cannot physically move.
Yeah,
and I'm being taken by this wave of people that's just pulsating and gyrating, and I feel unsafe.
Yeah, and the one thing, if you'll allow me to be, you know, candid here, the mosh pit at a Danzig concert is definitely not the right kind of mosh pit. the kind of, you know, because my sister was into that sort of
scene?
The hardcore scene.
Yeah.
Not so much the Danzig scene, but the actual, like, you know, everybody's kind of there and the pit is nice and you protect people and all that, and
right.
You know, throwing elbows and punches and stuff like that isn't the thing that you do.
I would hope that wasn't a standard operating procedure.
Yeah, the wrong kind of people can really turn a thing bad. And one of the cool things about that scene, at least, you know, back in the 80s, was that there were dudes who were not violent to other people until they saw someone doing something like that. And then they would eject them from from the pit at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's why you could have, you know, 5 foot tall high school students and, you know, the older 20 somethings and all that, everybody there together because they're kind of looking out and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I missed that. I missed that part. I was in the let's just throw punches and screw everybody up.
Yeah. Not great. Although I did attend a concert. It was still really, really cool. But I attended one where a guy who was being crowd surfed.
Yeah.
Landed on a card table that somebody had set out.
Oh, jeez.
And it was really. I mean, everybody was like, dude, are you okay? He's like, yeah, and he felt bad about the table. but then he got right back in. And yeah, it's...
Who puts a card table in a mosh pit?
Yeah, well, it was outside of the... That was the thing. It was outside of the mosh pit. I think it was for the people who were doing, like, the door.
Okay.
Like, you know, the box, the card table was the box office, yeah, basically. But yeah, I mean, that was the thing. You could get kicked in the head, but not somebody being aggressive. It's, you know, someone's being lifted around in the crowd and, you know, their foot accidentally hits you. Not like the front of it, but like the heel, right, of the foot and the thing. It's not cool. It doesn't feel great, but it is, but
you gotta, if you're, you know, you gotta watch out for yourself in that situation.
Yes. Exactly. And I don't think that happens anymore. I don't think that is done as much these days.
Crowd surfing?
Well, I don't know. Probably there are still... No. The good mosh pit.
Oh,
the
nice, I see. Right.
Everybody's a friend mosh pit thing.
I want to... If I ever become a rock star, I want to have the everybody's a friend mosh pit in the audience.
Yeah. That'd be good. Hey, speaking about rock stars... I recently had somebody talk to me about this guy named Screaming Lord Sutch.
Screaming Lord Sutch.
Yeah, he's a guy from like the 1950s who's a musician guy, who 50s or 60s maybe. And then beyond, but that was when he was kind of famous, kind of mixed horror and rock and roll together.
Okay.
And I watched this this documentary about him, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, oh my gosh, because I did not mean to do this, because I didn't know who he was at the time. But in the video for what is the one where we become rock stars after we drink the?
Oh right. It's the Smashing Pumpkins song.
Ava Adore. In the third variation.
Yeah.
You know, at first it's just us, and then it's us as kind of douchey rock stars, and then it's us as like crazy rock stars. In the crazy rock star thing, the guy who I am.
Oh, I think I lost you.
Can you hear me? Oh, I'm here.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, Ben just hung up.
It still says I'm connected.
That's weird. He said, Paul, check your headphones. Oh, I think I lost, and then it hung up.
If you can hear me, I can't hear you anymore. Check your headphones.
Hopefully.
And the call failed.
He's probably also talking. This is one of those weird things that sometimes happens, where he's probably talking and I'm probably talking.
There you go. Calling Paul. I don't know if you'll be able to hear or not. This is the Calling Paul song.
But it should be interesting.
Maybe he's calling me at the moment.
Oh, Ben's leaving a message.
It's ringing.
Oh, here it comes.
I can hear it ringing.
Hey,
what happened?
I don't know. You hung up, it seemed like, to me.
Well, on my end, it's just like you went quiet, but the phone was still on, and then it hung up on me.
Yeah, and for me, it was like you were like, hey, Paul, can you hear me? I was like, yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me? And then your line went dead.
No, I didn't touch my phone, so.
But anyway, yeah, Screaming Lord Sutch. So anyway, the guy that I am in the third thing is pretty much this guy.
Really?
That was his act. Yeah, he would wear like big coats and hats and you know, act crazy and stuff. So yeah, it was kind of cool. Also, did you listen to Art Bell when he was on?
Not regularly. I think I only heard like one show, but I know who Art Bell is.
Yeah. Because I just recently there was a thing where I don't know if you know, there was a sort of an infamous Area 51 worker call.
Okay.
Where this guy from Area 51 called in and like was worried about what's going to be happening, and he was telling Art Bell that, you know, they could be safe, but they don't want people to be safe. They want people to die. All this kind of stuff.
Oof.
It turns out the guy who did that call has sort of come forward saying that he was the one who did it and that it was a prank and stuff like that. The reason I mention it is because he had more planned, but instead of that happening, the phone line went dead. And Art Bell said that it was cut off and he didn't know how it had happened, which I was reminded of because that was what just happened here.
Do you think Art Bell was in on the joke? I can't imagine that a lot of his callers were this Area 51, not that guy, but we know we're in the vein of this Area 51 guy.
Well, I mean, I do feel as though, knowing what I know about show business and things like that, I do think that it is quite possible that Art Bell had recruited at least some people to call in.
Yeah.
But having listened to a lot of Art Bell, I really think that if our show were to suddenly turn into a thing where anybody could just call in at any time and we would talk to them, I think that we would get some crazy people. And we wouldn't have to make people make up stuff. People would eventually just start calling in and being crazy.
And, you know, it is possible for people to call in. The show would sound terrible. But, if somebody calls me during when we record, I can conference them in.
Yeah, that could happen, Ben. But I'm talking about live callers calling in. This is not something that you want to do with your phone number.
No.
But if you do, just call Ben Lawrence.
Actually, I'm wondering.
His phone number.
You know, we could.
What?
We could have live callers via Skype. Or like Google Voice.
Yeah, it's possible. we'd have to set up an account that isn't tied to either one of us.
Yeah.
So that we wouldn't have to deal with it when the show isn't going on.
Exactly.
That would be the only thing.
Yeah, no, we don't record all the time. Because you're listening to it now, it's a podcast. Yeah. Doesn't mean that was last week's topic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh man, one of my favorite Mr. Show bits of all time.
The best bit about that sketch was how much they aged David Cross in the span that it took.
Exactly.
Whether it was days or weeks, I can't remember. Like
the stress of it all.
Yeah.
That one and Audition, I think, were two of my favorite ones. Oh yeah. My gosh. Hey, speaking about favorite ones, we have a favorite bit that we do on this show. And I think we actually have some corrections, Ben.
I believe you're right.
So for those of you who listen to this show all the time and hate this part, Ben and I do our best to never look anything up when we're talking on the show, and we also don't prepare by looking things up for this show.
Exactly.
Instead, we let our audience do corrections. So if you are listening to... In fact, you can submit a correction for any episode, really, if you want to. Just let us know what the episode was, what we got wrong, and we will read it and let you know. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, our number one corrections person, Jennifer Pratt, who happens to be my wife, hello Jennifer, has submitted corrections for last week's show, perhaps.
Yes, episode 116, last week's show.
Corrections.
Ding.
Ding.
I guess this week's corrections is more editorializing than corrections, but here we go.
And you're also free to editorialize if you like. Okay.
Doesn't mean we will read all of them.
Yes.
We were talking about John Amos and the TV show Good Times.
Yes.
And she says on the TV show Good Times, John Amos played the father James Evans Sr.
That is correct.
And she says, John Amos is a national treasure and is very much alive. I'm very glad to hear that.
Yes. Oh, Judge Judy is still alive. I already told you that, I think.
Yeah, I haven't heard that she passed away.
No, she hasn't.
We were talking about Judith Shinlin. Oh!
Yeah, that's Judge Judy.
That's Judge Judy.
Hey, look at that.
She's very much alive as well. The reason you thought she had died is because there was a fake press release that was leapt on by the internets announcing her death. Any celebrity has a death hoax out there. Any and every celebrity has a death hoax out
there. Yeah.
Judge Tom Judy Hanks is still recording new episodes and will do so until at least 2021. She's in the Guinness Book of World Records for having the longest uninterrupted career as a television arbitrator, jurist. Yes, People's Court has been around a lot longer, but the jurist arbitrator has changed. No more Wapner. Yeah, no more Judge Wapner. Yeah. Is Harry Wapner still alive? Is it Harry?
Oh boy, I don't. Judge Wapner? I don't know. I don't know, but he's been off the air for a while. He himself.
What was that? What was that? Weatherman Harry Wapler?
Northwest, I don't know.
It would be the Wapler Doppler radar.
Oh my gosh! I know of what you speak. I think Jennifer is a fan of that as well. So we will for sure hear about that later on. Yeah.
We were talking about augmented reality, virtual reality, and the potential for injury and death.
Oh, yes.
And she says, AR fatalities have already occurred. Pokemon Go is considered AR, so are GPS systems. People have walked off cliffs, driven off cliffs, run into trees, gotten lost, and died of exposure. The Wii, people would break things. People break in windows, their wrists and hands, lighting fixtures, TVs, other people. I haven't read any news reports because I haven't looked of people injuring themselves using the Wii. I've only seen video of people like throwing their remotes into their TVs or like breaking the chandelier or something.
Oh yeah, and is property damage? Well, we could get into that.
VR is a whole lot weirder, yes, but more contained. It is complete disorientation. So AR gives you a sense that you can view the world around you. You may choose to ignore it, but you can actually see it. In VR, you know that there is furniture in the room, but you absolutely cannot see it. People may be in the room.
Yep.
You cannot see them. You cannot walk out onto your porch with your VR headset on and expect to be able to navigate the door to the porch itself, any stairs to or from the porch, any porch furniture, etc. VR injuries are going to be a thing like early AR. Broken TVs, light fixtures, wrists and hand bones, sprained ankles, but far less likely to be fatal, which doesn't mean I've forgiven Paul for punching my hope chest.
Yes. And I got a talking to about that.
Oh, did you?
For sure. Yes. And I deserved it. I totally should not have punched the hope chest.
All right. And we were talking about roasts, and I guess you talked about a comedian who transgressed.
I don't remember. Let's hear it.
She says Jeff Ross was the comedian who transgressed. He now does many, many, many sets and roasts at that jail and others. He has not tried it in a prison.
Oh.
What were we talking about?
I don't think it's Jeff. Oh man, I really don't think it's Jeff Ross. I know who Jeff Ross is.
Jeff?
I don't think it's him. So I can picture the guy's face in my head.
So what were we talking about? Some comedian who does roasts in prisons?
No, it's not a roast, and this is important. It wasn't a roast. It was a comedian who was on a talk show.
That's right. Yeah.
And he was talking about his toughest gig.
Yeah.
And that was the story that he told. I can see his face.
What's he look like?
Like I said, he's dark hair.
Jeff Ross.
He's the guy who's talking about. He's not a. At least as far as I know, he's not a roast fixture like Jeff Ross is. But he was a talk show comic. He would show up on talk shows every once in a while. He had one bit, and I'm almost positive this is the guy. I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure. He has something about going to the bathroom in an airport restroom.
What?
And how the water splashed up back into his butt.
I believe.
And he said, and now I couldn't stop thinking about what was laying eggs in me.
I believe when that happens, that's called Poseidon's kiss.
Oh, jeez. But yeah, I can't, for the life of me, I can't remember the guy's name.
Should we just start naming dark-haired stand-ups?
No, it's not Dom Irrera, but it's a guy kind of like Dom Irrera.
Paul Provenza.
No, not Paul Provenza, for sure.
Dom Irrera. Dom Irrera, I think, did his best work when he was on Dr. Katz.
Oh, I don't... I mean, he's... yeah, he's pretty...
I think he was also in the short-lived George Carlin sitcom.
Oh, man, I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, Carlin had a... He had a sitcom. For, like, a season.
I was going to say, how did that go? Well, that's how that
well,
went.
Well, you know, it was on in, like, the early 90s, and so I remember watching it and liking it, but I it's probably one of those things where if I saw it today, I wouldn't like it.
Yeah, I could see that. But probably if he were to have, if he were still alive and were to do a sitcom, he probably would be different.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that's it for corrections.
Oh, okay. Well,
and
it was, oh, speaking about comics, I read a thing that Tig Notaro wrote about, what's his head? Louis C.K. today.
Oh, yeah?
And I thought it was actually pretty good. The question of, about welcoming him back, you know, somebody was like, you know, what can he do to get back in and stuff like that? And she used a metaphor. And she was like, if there was a janitor who was really good, but also publicly masturbated in the office, no matter how good of a janitor he was, you would probably not invite him back.
There was a... Tig Notaro was recently on Fresh Air on NPR, and I caught part of the interview where... she was asked about her her involvement with Louis C.K. because he's the executive producer of her Amazon TV show, and he like released her stand-up set on his website.
Yep.
And so everybody, and then she started when this whole like Louis thing started happening. She was like one of the front runners of exposing him. Yeah, because of exposing him for exposing himself, and a lot of people were like, "How can you do that to Louis? He has helped you so much in your career." And her reaction to that was that she basically didn't have a history with Louis. A lot of people were like, "How can you betray your friend?" And she said on Fresh Air, she told Terry Gross that. She obviously knew who he was when, like, he tweeted about her set at Largo when she, like, broke out and said to the audience that she had cancer. Like, she knew who she was. She had, like, done shows with him, but she didn't consider him a friend. They weren't, like, tight.
Yeah.
And even through this working relationship, they never, like, quote, became friends. So it wasn't more like betraying a friend. It was like cutting ties with a business partner.
Yeah, I could see that. And the other thing that's kind of weird, she did a short film. Do you know about this? The short film where she hires a clown?
Does the clown masturbate in front of children?
No. She hires a clown for her birthday. And it's just her. She's the only client.
No, I do not know this.
Well, the thing is that then Louis C.K. did that on Saturday Night Live as a sketch.
He stole her bit?
Well, that's the question. I mean, what else? Was it her? Was it his idea or was it the Saturday Night Live... writer's idea,
right?
And he just so happened to be the person that it's weird, you know.
I'm not aware of this.
And the only thing that I can think about, because of, you know, what we talked about with Twitter and all that kind of stuff, one of the big things when somebody is quote unquote stolen someone else's joke, the big thing is, do they actually follow that person? Is it possible that it got retweeted into their timeline?
Right.
You know, all that kind of stuff. And now, you know, a lot of us are coming onto the other side of going, you know, at first it seemed inconceivable. that someone and someone else had just thought of the same joke. But now it's actually pretty common. Especially like if it's one of those things of three words I say after sex. Well, you know, when you're thinking along those lines, that's actually a narrow, you know, the same three words. The four words after sex, you know, and by the power of Grayskull, let's say.
I like that one. I'm going to use that.
Well, that's the thing is that the idea of all the people that are on Twitter, two people thinking of that same thing, because you've got four words, chances are, you know,
right.
Pretty good.
I'm guessing that joke stealing has always occurred. It's just now people know about it more. I'm pretty sure, like back in the 40s, you know, Don 40s. Back in the 70s, Don Rickles would go up onto a stage on Vegas and start riffing on people and saying jokes. And there's a comedian sitting in the audience going, "That's mine," but nobody knew it or nobody believed it because that comedian didn't have a Twitter. The only people that would know of that comedian that he's the one who thought of that joke was because they were one of 10 people who saw him at a stand-up club in Sarasota.
Right, but the thing is that, you know, did Don Rickles sit in the audience and hear that guy's joke?
See, that's probably the thing. That's the thing.
Is there a chance, though, that there's a guy who sells jokes to Don Rickles? That's one of the things I think about a lot, is that,
yeah,
you know, there are people who do buy jokes. Do buy jokes. Hey, hold on. That's a different... But, like, with a... Okay, here's an example, right? Twitter.com. There's this guy that I follow. He's a journalist. Works up for BuzzFeed. And somebody accused him of stealing his joke. Like, hey, man, I came up with this joke.
Yeah.
Now, I follow the guy, right? And I think he's funny. And I know his sense of humor. This joke that he tells, right?
Yeah.
Is his sense of humor. And his point to this guy who said, hey, you stole my joke, is, dude, I don't know who you are. I don't follow you. We're both making a joke about this thing that's in popular culture right now. Right. My wording and your wording are not that, you know, he goes down the list. And I thought about it because someone had also done that to Patton Oswalt before.
Yeah.
You know, Patton, I can't believe that you have to steal other people's jokes. This is... And, I mean, I just don't... I don't see him doing that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see Patton Oswalt going out of his way to get jokes from other people.
Yeah. Yeah, but you never know, though. So, I mean, I don't see Patton doing that either, but, like... we talked about him before, George Carlin, who like was one of my favorite comedians when I was growing up, and mm-hmm. I would watch all of his HBO like hour long specials, and in one of the last ones, he told a joke that I heard Billy Connolly tell probably 10 years before. Whoa. Coincidentally on an HBO special, and I gotta imagine like. I wouldn't ping Carlin to be a joke thief, right?
Right.
Because he has a very distinct he had a very distinct voice, but this joke was almost word for word the same that Billy Connolly told.
Do you remember what the joke was?
Yeah, it's basically why do Scottish people have sex with sheep at the edge of a cliff so it pushes back more.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, Billy Connolly, who happens to be Scottish, told that joke.
Yeah. It makes more sense that that's a Billy Connolly joke.
Yeah. And then Carlin says it 10 years later on the same network. And when I heard that, I'm like, oh, George, why are you taking Billy's joke? But then I started thinking about it. I'm like, it's totally possible that he came up with that on his own. It's weird if he did, but it's possible.
Well, it's also, I mean, this is one of those things that I just don't know about. Jokes that that get told, right?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I would always be confused, like, where do jokes come from?
Right.
That was my big thing. Like, now, jokes come from Twitter.
Yeah.
That's where I saw it. Or you know, jokes are in magazines, or jokes get told by comedians. But before then, where did these jokes come
from? I want to give Carlin the benefit of the doubt, and I don't think that he knowingly stole that joke. And this is my hypothesis. This is what I came up with. And this is, you know, before Twitter. So I think the way jokes are made is, you know, when a mama joke and a daddy joke get together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think a lot of it comes out from comedians hanging out with each other and riffing off of each other. And so I think what happened was somebody saw that Billy Connolly special and said it in front of Carlin, but didn't attribute it to Billy Connolly.
Yeah.
And played it off as if it was his own. And maybe Carlin was like, hey, can I use that in my routine? Oh yeah, no, you totally use it.
Oh man, that reminds me of the thing. I know that we've talked about this before, but Negative Land, right? Yeah.
Who we saw live after who we saw give a speech, the Little Theater.
Exactly. Do you remember this? I think you were there for that story. I think what's his name? Fatboy Slim.
Yeah.
Paid their record label, Sealand Records, for a sample that Negative Land stole from a vinyl record that they stole from a church at one point in time.
I didn't know that story, but it fits within the narrative of both Negative Land and Fatboy Slim.
So he cleared the sample with the record company, but the record company never actually cleared that sample with whoever it was originally from. It's crazy.
Because that was Negative Land's whole like point of being, right?
Yeah.
Is that you samples are out there in the ether, exactly, and you can use them.
Like, once something is made, I can use it. This is my, you know, and it goes back to collage almost too, right?
Yeah.
Like Max Ernst, famous collage maker, probably never, you know, even thought about paying the magazine company.
Yeah.
Or the catalog company or whatever, where the things came from, the images that he used. But it's kind of crazy, right?
Yeah.
As the internet gets more sophisticated, eventually someone is going to come up with an algorithm that goes through and finds images similar to yours. And there will probably be some sort of a weird lawsuit based on that. Same thing with music, right?
Right.
You have you train a bot to recognize certain melodies, certain songs and all that, and then you just let it go through the entire catalog and figure out.
I think, and I haven't looked into this, but I think for music, you can copyright a melody, but you cannot copyright a chord progression. And so you can have basically the same song, but as long as the melody is different, the notes can be exactly the same.
That's very interesting. Obviously, the recording, though, can't be used. And that's the thing I'm
thinking of. Exactly. You can't use the recording.
Like,
yeah.
Well, that whole Bittersweet Symphony thing.
Oh, man. I think about that every time I hear a story about artists who, like, put a lot of work into something but then don't get compensated for it.
Yeah.
Because Bittersweet had the number one like Billboard chart topper, and the Rolling Stones get all that money.
Now, one of the things that's interesting is that the Rolling Stones themselves paid royalties to Katie Lang because their song "Has Anybody Seen My Baby" matched Constant Craving, and apparently she didn't even know about it. They just did it preemptively. They were like, you know, somebody noticed that it sounded the same, so they were like, okay, let's cut a deal with this before it actually comes out. Speaking about cutting a deal with something, hey Betty!
Oh god.
Yeah, so Betty, as you know, 12 years old now, and she gets really frustrated when we don't talk to her during the Shouting for Betty segment. So
yelling for Betty.
So here, Betty. So Ben, have you ever played Cards Against Humanity?
Oh, we're talking about this.
Yeah. So Betty has won more games of Cards Against Humanity than anyone else in our family.
So, I may be breaking some rules here, but Betty, can you remember and can you tell to me what your favorite card combination is?
What did the high school program used to encourage students to do better on their work? Bees?
Bees?
That's a pretty good one.
Bees?
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
So the rule is that if she doesn't understand what the card says, she can't play it.
Ah.
She has to put it back. So far, that's only happened once since the rule came in, so... Yeah, it's pretty cool. Other than that, we are pretty much to the end of the show. Betty, is there anything you want to tell the people?
No.
Okay, she's gone.
She's gone. Yeah. I will tell you that, like, when I think I first played Cards Against Humanity at an annex retreat, and one of the cards that I just totally broke me was the card. It said, "Pac-Man fiercely."
That's...
I'm going to edit this bit out, but yeah, I'd never experienced anything like that on print before
A game. Yeah. They really go for it. Sometimes I don't agree. Sometimes I don't agree with it, but, I have lost the most games.
Yeah.
By the way. So there you go. We do what we can, but I like it. I think it's a good, it's a good concept.
And it's a good company as we've mentioned before.
Yeah. So, that was the first time I played it was, on Mother's Day. We got Jennifer that for Mother's Day.
Cool.
So, yeah.
Alrighty. In that case.
Yes. Well, Ben, keep it wrong.
Keep it wrong, Paul.
Obviously. And it's always good to talk to you. I'm very happy with how this turned out.
Yay, and I'll be connecting with you sometime during the weekend. We'll make another arrangement for the next time we do this.
That sounds good. And congratulations on being somewhat more employed than you had been.
Yeah, it's great.
All right.
All right.
Talk to you later.
Take care.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.